all my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life.
Welcome to Darren Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City Radio. I am Darren Smith along with my guy, Mr. Sterling Holmes. Sterling has been benched today. He has to do the house. He has to do the show from the house himself. So all that trash talking that you were doing about me, you know, being limited minutes, you know, you have to be careful of the words you say, Sterling, because they can come back and bite you. So first of all, how you feeling this afternoon, man?
I'm actually feeling great. I couldn't do the whole 162-game MLB schedule. I had to take a little off day to day. No, I'm doing good. I had a slight temperature last night, and so in the sake of where we're at and everything, I figured it'd be better to stay at home today. I feel fantastic. It's a slight fever. It's better now. It's down to normal, but wanted to be cautious. Don't want to get anyone sick, so doing it from home today. Joining you.
Well, see, look, everybody can't live the life that I live. So being able to do the show from the house or on the road is a beautiful blessing from time to time. Look, give us a call at 913-491-8255. Of course, you know, from now until February 8th or probably till next year in Los Angeles, we'll be talking about the Super Bowl and your Kansas City Chiefs. So obviously, we'll be looking at the matchup between the Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So if you want to join in on the conversation, you can do so by doing that. We touched a little bit about it yesterday, so, but some of the latest news is Eric Fisher being out for Super Bowl 55 with a torn Achilles. Your quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any surprise. Once we saw this happen, the second we knew it was an Achilles injury, we go, he's done. He may not be back next year, but we'll focus on that in the offseason once it comes to this. But he's missing the Super Bowl. This is absolutely devastating for the Chiefs. Mitchell Schwartz is probably still out, although we're finally starting to hear at least a little bit on that front. We've started to hear some rumblings that he may be coming back for the Super Bowl. This probably means that Andrew Wiley is going to be starting at tackle again. He's fine. If Wiley performs, good for him because he's going to be a free agent. He'll get paid because tackles make a lot more than guards. But, you know, I do think it's a problem, but Mahomes is able to roll out of the pocket. It's not like this is some stud offensive line to begin with. This wasn't the top ranked offensive line in the NFL, but this is a big difference. This is a big letdown, especially since Eric Fisher was probably having his best season in the NFL.
There are also injured players still in who did not play in Sunday's championship games that are expected to be healthy for Super Bowl 55, Chiefs running back Le'Veon Bell and, oh my gosh, there's a pregnant pause right there. Sammy Watkins is scheduled to return for the Chiefs and be ready to play on February 7th, along with Antonio Brown and Tampa Bay Buccaneers safety Antoine Winfield. Now, you know, being that obviously we're both pulling for Kansas City to win this game, metaphorically speaking, how does the return for these four players, and what does that mean for their teams, respectively?
So, for me, the biggest one is definitely Sammy Watkins. I knew you knew I was going to say Sammy Watkins, but I just think that he adds another dimension to Kansas City's offense. As good as they are, when he's on the field compared to when he's off, those splits are ridiculous. We've seen Darrell Williams be able to handle the workload and handle it fine. Darryl the barrel, as Josh Briscoe likes to say. But with Sammy Watkins, he just adds a whole other dimension. It makes it even tougher when you have Tyreek, Travis Kelce, when Mecole Hardman's doing what he can do with his speed, and then you add in Sammy Watkins, it's almost unfair. This Tampa Bay secondary is already not great, so adding Sammy back is just almost impossible to stop this high-powered offense.
But again, with the return of Antoine Winfield, that is, even though he's a young player and I believe he's a rookie, to the Tampa Bay Bucs, that's their quarterback of the defense. Like, he has stepped up tremendously this season for them, obviously with Tom Brady on the offensive side of the ball. Now, Antonio Brown, you know, as I mentioned to you and Steve before, I know you talked about that, you know, his impact in last Sunday's game might be missed, but again, as I mentioned, because he only had one catch and 10 yards in the New Orleans Saints game, that his presence wasn't going to be missed as much. Now, I will say that I don't think some of those passes that had, if they would have gone Antonio Brown versus Mike Evans or Chris Godwin, he would have, I don't think he would have dropped those passes. So in that regard, I feel like he might have been missed in that game.
Mike Evans is 6'4". He's not getting 5'11", no, 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 5'10", ain't no. getting up there.
No, no, no. I'm with you on that. But the problem is that he has the speed, plus Brady's not going to, he's obviously not going to throw it 7 foot in the air for Antonio Brown to jump up there and get. Obviously, look, if you're Mike Evans, you're 6'5", you try to put it as high as point so nobody can jump up and snatch it over you. But looking at that, what does Antonio Brown's return as well as Antoine Winfield's return mean for the Bucs?
I think Winfield is bigger than Antonio Brown. I'm kind of going with the same method you and I went with last week, where as good as Antonio Brown is, we're not doubting his talent by any means. The Bucs have so many weapons already, and there's only one football. You have Mike Evans, who's not only a red zone threat, but won over 1,000 yards again this season, 7 times in a row. You already have Chris Godwin. You occasionally get Gronkowski and Cameron Brate involved. And Scotty Miller. Scotty Miller's come up big in multiple moments this season. Antonio Brown's great. There's only one football. To me, I don't think he makes that much of a difference. I think Winfield makes more difference for the Bucs than Brown does.
Okay, and I see. This is where I have to push back, because of what you're just saying about Antonio Brown and one football, the same can be said about the Chiefs. I mean, you said it. You just got through saying you got Kelce, you got Tyreek Hill. Obviously, you got the running backs. You got Sammy Watkins. There's only one football. So, I mean, so having more than one weapon or more than one option, that's good for any offense. And so I don't see how Antonio Brown doesn't make that offense better, because you have another guy that you have to be concerned with.
My thing here is I think Scotty Miller fits that role pretty solidly. And I think Sammy Watkins brings more to run blocking, pass blocking, than Antonio Brown does. We've seen Sammy Watkins have.
Well, they have different offenses, so I mean, offense does. So I mean, I'm saying that to say we can't talk about Sammy Watkins blocking if Tampa Bay's offense doesn't call for someone like Antonio Brown to block. That's so. I mean, we can't.
We can't use that as a
comparison between those.
No, I'll agree there, because Antonio Brown's not asked to do the same things that say Sammy Watkins is. I get what you're saying there. Just to me, I think Winfield makes more of a difference than Antonio Brown does. That's where I'm coming from. And it's nothing against Antonio Brown. Like I said, I think he's a great player. I think he's obviously a stud. I just don't see how much he moves the needle for the Buccaneers.
No. I know we're probably beating around, but I'm just saying, like Sammy Watkins adds to the offense, I'm saying having Antonio Brown as an option, because look, obviously you can't put everybody on the field. You can't put everybody on the field, because you got to have five linemen blocking, so you can't have that. But the fact that if Antonio Brown goes down, Scotty Miller comes back up. So I'm saying having additional weapons, if you're Tom Brady, only helps, because now if you're Steve Spagnuolo, you have to account for everybody on the field. Are you going to double Evans? Are you going to double Chris Godwin? What are you going to do about Gronkowski? If you got Antonio Brown out there, you still got a running back there. So I'm saying, the more weapons obviously makes Tampa Bay that much more dangerous. Just as well as it does for the Kansas City Chiefs with all the weapons. Again, having Le'Veon Bell back, to go with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Darrell Williams, what type of impact he'll have is remains to be seen. But the fact that you now have three healthy running backs, you bring back Sammy, and you're talking about mixing Sammy in with McCole, with Byron, with DeMarcus. And Sammy. I'm saying, just like the addition of Antonio Brown gives Tom Brady more weapons, the addition of Sammy mixed with everything else that we've seen gives Patrick more weapons as well. So, look, I think that, to me, I love defense, and so I love to see what type of chess match Todd Bowles is going to try to put up against Andy Reid in this offense, and then, of course, Steve Spagnuolo against Byron Leftwich and Bruce Arians in his offense. So, look, I think the winner at the end of the day is going to be the Chiefs fans, and hopefully the betters in Las Vegas, because I think at the end of the day, I think this has the potential to be the highest scoring Super Bowl in NFL. And I think this could actually beat what happened between the Philadelphia Eagles and the New England Patriots a few years ago, which, now I think about it, man, I need them to hurry up and do something, with these props and stuff so I can get into it.
I don't think, and again, I'm not saying having Antonio Brown is obviously better than not having Antonio Brown. I was just saying that Winfield adds more. But when it comes down to the secondary, I trust his Chiefs secondary a lot more than I trust his Buccaneers secondary. I trust L'Jarius Sneed. I trust Bashaud Breeland. I trust Tyrann Mathieu. I trust Javarius Ward. And now, with the addition of Juan Thornhill reverting back to his rookie playing self, that's just a whole nother weapon. By the way, Dan Sorensen did a fine job against Stephon Diggs when asked to cover him a couple times. So I thought that was actually pretty impressive by him. The Chiefs, in my opinion, match up pretty well against his Buccaneers wide receiving core. You have the height of Javarius Ward, who's 6'1", which is relatively tall for a cornerback, going up against Mike Evans. You have L'Jarius Sneed and his speed going up against Antonio Brown in the slot. And then you have Bashaud Breeland, the veteran, going up against Chris Godwin. I actually like the way Kansas City in this secondary lines up against Tampa Bay in their wide receiving core.
I think the winners are the fans. I'm sitting there literally while you're talking, I'm sitting there trying to map out in my mind how these matchups are going to take place. And again, as we discussed yesterday, the key to who wins this game is going to be who creates the most turnovers first, or who has the most turnovers, and then who's able to capitalize. I mean, look, we saw where last week Tom Brady had 3 interceptions against the Green Bay Packers, and the Packers couldn't really capitalize on them. I mean, they already had essentially a 2-score lead, and Brady kept throwing the ball into harm's way, putting it out there, and you know they get to, you know, he gets it intercepted, but the Packers couldn't do anything about it. Now he does that against Kansas City. You know, Patrick and the company, they can wait that up all day. However, to that point, because we have seen, and what I've told you all as it relates to the defense of Tampa Bay, that Bucs secondary, as much as they, you know, they were banged up, again, you got Winfield coming back healthy. We don't know the status of Whitehead coming back for this game as well, because he did leave the Packers game injured. But that defense, though, got pressure. They got, you know, they got pressure on Drew Brees. He forced him into interceptions. Got sacks. Did the same to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, if I remember correctly, they put Aaron Jones out the game. Am I correct?
Yeah, Aaron Jones got injured. That was after the fumble.
So this is not going to be the same game that we saw in November. One, because again, as I stress, they're not going to single cover Tyreek Hill. If they do that, then all bets are off. For us, we hope so, but you know, Ty Bowles might be one thing, but stupid is stupid 2 games in a row. It's not that. So I like the idea of what this game is going to amount to. Again, to me, I like the chess match because we don't know exactly what improvements or what changes that they're going to make. I mean, Bruce Arians said in his presser after the Monday that he really doesn't like the fact that he has to play the Chiefs again because he has to go back and look at the tape and look at the film and see everything that they did wrong in that game. Now, remember, they were down 17-0. I think, they talked about it, I think, on Undisputed this morning where people listen to the show who you least expect it, because Skip was talking about how, you know, they talked about that play that Travis Kelce tried to throw the ball to Tyree for the touchdown, and he said himself, they left 4 points out there on the field because they ended up having to kick a field goal. Instead of you being up 24-28-0, you're up 17-0, and somehow, some way, with that fumble that Patrick had, it allowed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to come back into the ballgame. Again, I don't believe whether or not the linemen are hurt or not that this is going to have any type of effect on this game. But you obviously cannot afford to make those same mistakes, and I just know that they're going to do it, not despite me, but because he can't help himself. They're going to try to do something fancy in the game, in the Super Bowl, which is going to drive me crazy.
Well, Darren, if it doesn't, hear you complaining when they do stuff fancy when it works. I don't hear you complaining when the little 4 tops works it out. I don't hear a peep from you then.
Well, first of all, it's not early in the ball game. Yeah, you know, that 4 tops that you talking about, the little Rose Bowl,
sure,
that happened later on in the game. So it's a difference between, you're the opening drive where you're down there trying to score instead of just you're down on the 1 yard line and you try to be cute, just pound the ball in, get up 7-0. If you get a turnover, look. Now you ask me my opinion. I'm telling you now, just because you don't like the answer, I'm a defensive guy. I just like to see smash football. I like to see you score when the opportunity. I mean, look. If you get up 28-0, then okay, I ain't got a problem with you. You know what you're trying to do, something cute and fancy. But the thing that I do have a problem with, though, in all seriousness, I have a problem with you trying to use your $500 million quarterback as a wide receiver. That I don't care for. I don't care how cute, how beautiful the design might look. He does
we'll
not
agree
need to
there.
Be out there catching any passes.
We'll agree there. I don't want him going up against a cornerback trying to one-hand a ball ever again. I do not want to see that. My thing is, this Chiefs offense, we've seen, they're not good at smash-mouth football. This is not what they do. There's a reason why Clyde Edwards-Helaire struggled to get in. It's not all on him. It's the reason why Le'Veon Bell couldn't do it. It's the reason why the Chiefs pass the ball when it's fourth and inches. It's the reason why when you have a backup quarterback in, they do a rollout on a fourth and one to Tyreek Hill. They're not good at smash-mouth football. They're not built for that. This offensive line is built to protect Patrick in pass protection. They're not built for protecting Darrell Williams, for protecting Clyde Edwards-Helaire, to protect Patrick. So they're not good at smash-mouth football. I don't mind when they do cute stuff, because you know why? This is what Andy Reid and this offense does best. I will trust him with any play call. And there's a reason why we're not complaining when they pass the ball in fourth and one. Most teams can't do that. This team can.
Not complaining about that, but however, passing the ball to Mahomes as a wide receiver is the issue that I have. Look, you're paying $500 million to be the quarterback. Let him be the quarterback. Now, if you want Travis Kelce or somebody to throw the ball, let him throw the ball to a different wide receiver. You don't throw it to Patrick. You got to protect Patrick at all costs. That's the part that I want. Now, Lamar Wallace, one of our viewers, is saying on Facebook that Spags knows how to beat Tom Brady. That is true. I don't disagree with that. Again, we brought Spags in for a reason. Spags, to me, has lived up to the hype. He's lived up to the money. I think outside of signing Patrick Mahomes to the extension, I think that is the best signing that Brett Veach has actually done since he's been the GM. Nothing against signing Tyrann Mathieu, nothing against Frank Clark, nothing against giving Chris Jones that extra money. I believe that the addition of Spags want to change the whole mindset of the team, because you got to remember, he was the DC that beat the undefeated New England Patriots when Tom Brady was there. It cost me $100,000. I ain't forgot about that either. But he made amends by winning the Super Bowl last year. But with that, we brought him in last year for three purposes: beat New England, get us past the AFC Championship game, win the Super Bowl. He's paid his debt in full. We run it back this year. He's done the same. I think with the exception of Eric Bieniemy, I think Steve Spagnuolo, win or lose, but perhaps win this game this weekend, is deserving of a head coaching position. Now, there probably won't be any available outside of Houston, and obviously he's not being interviewed for a head coaching position. But even if Eric Bieniemy gets passed over, I like the idea of both of these coaches still staying here. Running it back with Kansas City for a potential third Super Bowl run.
Yeah, with Spags, that was obviously massive, because it's not like Bob Sutton didn't have any talented guys on the defensive side of the ball. He had some talent. He just could never get a game plan in place. No one knew what they were doing. Spags really came in with a game plan, implemented it, and it took a few weeks when he first came in. What, it took 8 weeks for them to
it took a lot, because outside of literally two plays in the preseason, the starters that we know never played together until maybe Mexico City or something like that.
So or just Nashville to me, though, yeah. Spags, though, I'm agreeing, Spags deserves so much credit for what he's been able to do with this system. He gets the best out of guys. Again, Legarius Sneed, fourth-round rookie. Rashad Fenton, sixth-rounder. Tre'Varius Ward, undrafted. I mean, Bashaud Breeland's on a one-year deal, a guy that no one really wanted that much. I mean, he is getting so much out of guys that really weren't coming into this league expecting to do a ton. And I think that deserves a ton of credit. Again, give credit to Brett Veach for finding guys that fit the system, and then credit Spags for implementing that system and making it work.
Well, what I will say is that they made the hire with Spags first, and then allowing Spags, along with the scout department and Brett Veach, to hey, looking at tape and looking at game film, I think that guy might work, in our system, whatever. Again, the draft. Look, the Chiefs have done a phenomenal job. There's so much credit that that can be passed around as we look at where the team and how the team is constructed today. That I mean, it's hard to give credit because obviously John Dorsey deserves credit for drafting Mahomes and Kelce and Hill and those players before Brett Veach got into that role. But the Chiefs have done such an excellent job at hitting on those draft picks. Look, there have been some that haven't panned out, but for the most part, a lot of the players that the Chiefs draft, even in later rounds, they make the team and they contribute, which helps because the key is obviously you have to win while your quarterback is on their rookie contract, where you can kind of fill in on the defensive side and maybe on the offensive side of the ball, weapons around them, try to win as early as you can in during the season, which is what's happening with Patrick. Patrick is in the second Super Bowl in only his fourth season, but Patrick is still on his rookie deal. And because they picked up the fifth-year option, next year is still going to be on his rookie deal, just on that fifth-year option before the contract extension kicks in. So the Chiefs are doing everything the right way. You got these young players who are contributing right here, right now, that's making, not making a whole lot of money, but where they are respective in their draft position. I mean, they're contributing. And so when it is come time to, as Tyron likes to say, pay rent or collect the rent, they can either collect it here in Kansas City, or because they'll have one or two, maybe even three Super Bowl rings by the time they get to that point. Maybe they feel like they've won enough that they'll go somewhere else and get paid, or they'll just want to stay here and keep trying to win. So, and that's the good thing, because as long as you're hitting on your draft picks, you're spreading the money out to where you're paying your top end players. But you're also getting the most out of your younger draft picks that you're getting.
I mean, yeah, he hit on Legarius. He hit on some unconventional picks, like say Michael Dana. I mean, fifth rounder. A lot of people thought he was going to go undrafted, and he came in and performed. Tershawn Wharton, Derek Nottie, and he also learns to cut players or cut ties with guys, even if it makes him look a little, I don't want to say bad, but think about Breland Speaks. His first ever draft pick, he probably had some ties to Breland. He knew he wasn't going to make the team, and a lot of GMs may try and force him to make it and to pan out. Veach goes, you know what? This isn't going to work. Let's cut ties. It's a sunk cost and move on. And I think that takes a lot of looking at yourself and saying, I don't care how I look about this, but I want to put the best players in the position to succeed. And that was great for him to cut ties with Breland Speaks, knowing that even though it was your first overall draft pick as a GM, it didn't pan out.
I'm curious, before we go to break, we talked a little bit about it over the weekend as we were going into the AFC Championship game, about the importance of Patrick winning, or at least getting to the Super Bowl, versus being in a situation like your Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, where you don't. You win a Super Bowl, but you never get back there to it. And so he obviously didn't fall into that category, but also don't want to fall into the Russell Wilson category where he goes to back-to-back and splits. Patrick, it's been talk or whatever, and you got 2 weeks to talk about, so you got to fill your airwaves, talk shows and stuff like that. But to the extent Patrick wins this game, now I'm not going to put him in no GOAT status. It's only year three for him, the full-time starter. But where does Patrick rank as it relates to, the start of his career and where the potential can be? Because I think the only other player that I think may have won two Super Bowls in this short span, I think Tom Brady won in a 4-year span. He won his first, and then second and third. He won, I guess, in years 3 and 4 or 4 and 5. But I think maybe Ben Roethlisberger may have won two Super Bowls early on. But how do you see Mahomes, if he wins, you know, I know sky's the limit, but, you know, I don't want people putting him in a Hall of Fame just yet.
Oh, so here you go. If he wins, this is the best start to a career in NFL history. If he loses, he's maybe still the best start to a career in NFL history. Patrick Mahomes, I truly believe this. If he were to retire after this season, he would be in the Hall of Fame. I truly believe that. What he has done is unheard of. What he has done is historic, an MVP, a Super Bowl MVP, going to an AFC Championship game all three seasons, winning two, and at least having one Super Bowl. Yeah, that already is good enough in my book. That, as good as some of those stud quarterbacks have been, say Dan Marino, for instance. Dan Marino never did this.
Nope.
Phillip Rivers never did this.
Nope.
I mean, I'm just saying, to me,
Hold on now. We ain't putting Phillip Rivers in the Hall of Fame, though. Let's not.
No, but I'm just saying, if you want to throw a guy like this, I mean, what he has done has been historic, and there's no other way to put it. If you want to judge a quarterback by winning, which, fairly or unfairly, that's pretty much how you judge quarterbacks these days, Patrick Mahomes is a winner. So I think, in my opinion, if he were to retire, he is already a Hall of Famer.
I know someone asked, what are the Chiefs going to do about the O-line? You know, I know they're being coy, but I don't think Mitchell Schwartz comes back regardless of the 2 weeks between now and the Super Bowl.
Wiley's starting. I could almost guarantee you that Andrew Wiley's going to be starting at a tackle position. Which one, we don't know yet, but I would assume Andrew Wiley will be starting at probably left and probably Mike Remmers. So,
and I'll be honest, we talked a little bit about it last night on the Red Hour, Sterling, and I mean, I don't know what you think of this, but here's the thing. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break, but I do want to come back and I do want to talk about about this line situation, but my idea for what Patrick is going to do at the end of the day. So, look, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back here, Darren Sterling on ESPN Kansas City Radio. All right, we're back here on Darren Sterling on ESPN Kansas City. Myself, coming to you from an undisclosed secret location in my home studio, and Sterling coming somewhere from his basement, it looks like, and it's the Palacio Palace out in Overland Park or Mission Hills, or one of the top 1% places in Kansas. You know, I just ride across the street from Swell Park, so everybody know I live in the hood. But Sterling, you
well, know, I mean, I'm just saying, you would have a lot more money if you didn't make terrible bets.
I've made $3 bets. Right? I mean, I don't consider that being bad. Considering, you know, you go out to McDonald's, you forced to spend almost $8. I mean, I'm sorry if I spend $3 on that versus McDonald's. I think that's a good bet.
I cook. I made fried chicken, mashed potatoes, and biscuits 2 days ago. Fantastic.
Okay. Okay. I see you trying to get invited to the cookout, Sterling. You keep it up. You sure will be. Look, I want to talk about, again, we talked about the offensive line stuff as we went to break. But one of the points that I made to Steve and company last night is that, you know, Patrick makes a lot of big plays, but he makes a lot of big plays outside of the pocket. And, you know, whether you get pressure on him or not, that seems to be where he makes his biggest impact. You know, not really dropping back and trying to scan the field and do whatever. It seems to be that Patrick's strength is his legs and running around and making plays, you know, where maybe things break down. But, again, if you're going to pressure him and he's able to run outside the pocket, that ends up freeing somebody up to where the defense, they have to account for Patrick trying to run. And when he does that, that gets the defender off of somebody, off of one of the receivers of Travis Kelce. So I'm not quite sure. Again, we talk about who might replace Fisher or Schwartz or whoever. I don't think in the bigger scheme of things, it's really going to matter.
So I think the most likely scenario is going to be Mike Remmers at left tackle. You're probably going to have Allegretti at left guard, Ryder at center, Wisniewski at right guard, and then you'll probably have Wiley at right tackle. I don't know who's going to be at left or right, whether it's Remmers or whether it's Wiley, but I think those are going to be your two tackles. And I agree with you. Mahomes is, I don't want to say better, but he is just as good outside of the pocket as he is in it. We had James on Facebook Live say Buck's secondary doesn't have to cover as long with the front they have. While that is true, one, doesn't that show just how bad that secondary is with them still getting cooked even with a good front and good linebacking core? And two, when Patrick Mahomes gets out and extends plays, good luck. We saw, I think, was it Carlton Davis? Was that who it was? I think when they first played, got absolutely destroyed by Tyreek Hill.
I told you he was in the doghouse.
And I think he's maybe their number one cornerback. That's a problem. I'm just saying, as good as the front probably seven is of Tampa Bay, that back four or five is just brutal. And I think Patrick Mahomes is going to feast again. I think Tyreek Hill is going to feast again. I think Travis Kelce is going to feast again. When you have three of the best players on the same team and no one can cover at least two of those guys, good luck.
Here's the thing. I don't want people to think, well, because the way you're talking, I don't want people to think this is going to be a 49-0 blowout, because Tampa Bay can score. And, you know, I think it's going to be a shootout of biblical proportions. I mean, trust me, I'm interested. You talk about these bets, whatever I make. Trust me, I'm going to make some bets for this particular game where, you know, if I come home empty-handed, trust me, me and Patrick are going to have a problem, because if Patrick don't throw for five touchdowns, we fighting.
Five.
I need five from Patrick. Look, first of all, I think Patrick needs to make amends for his performance last year's game where he threw for two interceptions and people thought that Darrell Williams should have been the the MVP. So this time, you know, to shut people like Skip Bayless up, I need Patrick to go out there and throw for five touchdowns. Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill have two apiece. Oh yeah, I'm looking for a monster set, because you got to remember, Tom Brady had 505 yards and what, four touchdowns, whatever, in that loss to Philadelphia when they lost 41-33. I'm saying, I think that this could be that type of game where, you know, where we see the offense moving up and down the field, where, look, Patrick and Brady might have turnovers, they might have interceptions, but I think because both offenses can, you know, can score, that is going to make for a good, exciting game. Now, look, I do want to let the people know, let our audience know that I will be down in Tampa this weekend. I'll be there for 10 days, you know, getting everyone ready for Super Bowl 55. Monday is the Super Bowl opening night. So I want you all to follow my page, follow ESPN Kansas City Facebook page, as I'll be streaming the Tampa Bay Bucks virtual interview session that day on February 1st. It'll be from so I'm going to tell you the local times here in Kansas City, even though I'll be an hour ahead. So it'll be 10 o'clock to 10:45 here. And at 11 a.m., we'll carry the Tampa Bay Bucks with the head coach, as well as Tom Brady and eight other players. And then at 3 o'clock, Sterling, just so you know, just give you a heads up, we might do a deal to where we're just carrying the pressers live on Monday, and I think we have like maybe a 15-minute segment after that. But it'll be from 3 to 3:45 where we'll have the Kansas City Chiefs. And this will be the Super Bowl opening night. So we'll have Andy Reid, we'll have Patrick Mahomes, and eight other players. That'll be addressed in the media, something like that. So we may carry that, we may not. It'll just be a feel of that. But just giving you all an idea of what you can expect on our, you know, on our station and on our Facebook and social media pages. So Tuesday, we'll have the Chiefs virtual media at 8:30 to 9:30, as well as 10 to 10:45. I'll be carrying those. That'll be with Andy Reid and nine of the players, and then we'll have the assistant coaches. So we'll hopefully get a chance to talk to Eric Bieniemy, Steve Spagnuolo, those coaches as well. Wednesday, the Chiefs will be. I'll be streaming them 1:30 to 2:30, and then on that Thursday, 1:30 to 2:30 with the Chiefs as well. And then on Friday, the Chiefs will either be arriving at Friday or Saturday, so we won't have anything. But then coming back that Monday, hopefully Patrick and Andy will be, you know, be the victorious ones, where they'll have the virtual press conference with the winning head coach and Super Bowl MVP. So just want to let everybody know that I'll be doing wall-to-wall coverage down there of the Super Bowl, getting everybody ready for the game on that Sunday.
So in the words of Robert Randolph, ain't nothing wrong with that. But I do want to talk about Mecole Hardman very quickly, because this was a storyline that I think needs to get more attention. I don't know if you saw the video of Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes when Mecole came to the sideline, as one should be, upset and irritated at yourself and, you know, a little down. You see guys like Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes come up to you, say, we need you. Keep your head up. We need to keep your head in the game. You're going to have a big play later in this game. And then using Andy Reid, Bieniemy, and Mahomes to draw up plays to him, the jet sweep, the wide receiver screen to him for the touchdown to get him involved, get his head back in the game. That just shows the leadership that this team has and the camaraderie. Because we've seen mistakes. Tom Brady, I don't think, would do that. Tom Brady, I think, would rip into that guy. Bill Belichick would say, you're done. You're sitting on the bench, pal. You're out. You're in the doghouse. And I want to give Andy Reid credit. I mean, sure, it works for Belichick and Tom Brady, but this is a different style of method. This is a method of, you know what? You're coming back. You're going to come make a play. And guess what? He did make some plays. So I want to give this coaching staff, Mahomes, and Mecole Hardman some credit for at least bouncing back like that. That is leadership. When Mecole Hardman becomes a veteran in this locker room, he will remember this. This is how you build leaders.
Yeah, I got to push back just a little bit, because I'll give you Belichick, but I don't think Brady would do that. Now look, now we have seen footage, obviously, of Brady, you know, kind of berating a receiver from time to time, and then you know, a coach come and get in Brady's face, but. You know, a situation like if it's a young player, I don't think Brady does that, because he don't want to mess up. You know, he don't want to mess with the psyche of a young player like that. Because look, you got to remember that now, the leadership or the coaching styles are different in New England. You're pretty much trained, you know, like for every situation, perfection. You know, and look. I don't have a problem with it. I don't mind coaching like that, to where you're demanding perfection. I don't know. I always think back to remember the Titans, you know, when they're trailing in the state championship game, and they're like, you know, do the best is all we ask. And the guy's like, no, you demanded perfection, coach. And that's what, you know, we coach. And so, you know, they generally try to coach up and try to make sure that you don't make those type of mistakes. Everybody knows mistakes happen, but it's how you handle and how you bounce back from it. Again, it may work for New England if that's what you got. I don't think that Tom Brady berates, you know, the returner, because one, it doesn't have, you know, it happens because if you do that to me, you better not go out there and throw an interception, because now I'm coming at you. But that's just how I am. So,
but that's what Tom Brady does. I mean, Tom Brady can spike a ball in the dirt and act like it's the receiver's fault. I mean, he overthrew Mike Evans trying to blame Evans.
Look, it doesn't make it right. And if I'm Mike Evans, hey, bro, you know, I will come back at Brady when he throws that interception and nobody's around, and so I'm saying, look, as long as you're willing to receive it, or, you know, you think just because you take it, you better be able to receive as well. Now, that's all I'm saying. Now, again, as it comes to leadership, as Lamar mentioned, look, hey, I agree. But it also shows the relationship that these players have with one another, to where, you know, that, you know, I mean, they can do those type of things. You know, look, if they didn't have the relationship off the field that they do on the field, a situation like that, yeah, you know, could go in a whole different direction. I couldn't see that happening in Buffalo, because they would probably be playing too tight and be feeling like they have too much pressure. They don't feel that way in Kansas City. And look, and to Mecole Hardman's credit, he hasn't experienced a loss yet, you know, of this magnitude. He came in last year, won a Super Bowl. He wasn't here 2 years ago when they lost the AFC Championship game. So he doesn't know any better right now, and which is fine, and I'm not mad at him. So, the leadership, it just varies from locker room to locker room, team to team. And, you know, that type of stuff, I really don't want to say one's better than the other, because it works. You got to remember, man, he's got six Super Bowls. I mean, so it worked. You know, their style works as well.
Sure. No, I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying I like what Andy Reid did. I like what Mahomes did. I like what Travis Kelce did. I like what Mecole Hardman, because Mecole Hardman, again, he's on this rookie deal. We don't know what's going to happen with Sammy Watkins and D-Rob next year. We have no idea what his wide receiving group is going to look like. We need Mecole Hardman to step up. And him getting down on himself.
We need to show up.
Sure. But if he gets down on himself, that's you can't have that happen. So I think it just shows the camaraderie and the intricacies of this team, making sure they know, hey, man, you're one of us. You're our guy. Bounce back. You got this. I've been saying for a while now, jokingly, but now I'm kind of serious, maybe just put no one back to return punts, just have no one back there. I mean, the Chiefs.
I ain't doing that now. You're not finna pin Patrick on the 1 yard line. Forget that. Nope.
I'm joking, but my point is the Chiefs can score literally in any field position. I just don't want any mistakes to take the ball out of Patrick's hand. I don't want any.
I would rather just fair catch it. Just fair catch
sure.
it. You know,
there we go.
I can live with that. Fair catch it, and, you know.
I think I trust Tyreek Hill the most. Don't even run it back. Just go back there, fair catch it, and then get the ball. Because I want Patrick to have as many opportunities to have the ball.
Yeah, I'm not putting Tyreek back there, because if I'm the Bucs, I'm taking a cheap shot. I'll take 15 yards and get expelled if I take him out the game. So, no, I'm not.
Dude, come on. That's soft, though. You know they're not going to do that.
Hey, man, it's a Super Bowl, bro. Hey, you take any advantage possible. Don't tell me what somebody won't do for that ring. I'm trying to tell you.
No. That's a soft move, though. And you know that's a soft move. If someone were to take a cheap shot like that, that's a soft move.
Hey, man, I'm going to tell you one thing, man. My football coach in high school and college said this. He said, Darren, he said, if you want a team of Malcolm X's, that's what's going to help you win. You want some Dr. Martin Luther King, you let them date your daughter. So I was like, all right, hey, you know. So he said, what you going to be? I said, you already know how I roll. So, I'm not saying they're going to do it, but if they did, I'd understand. Look, sir, let's take a quick break when we come back. I want to look at some of the ramification that, you know, some of the fallout of the AFC and NFC championship game, especially with your boy, the whiner. The man full of emotion who shows none, Mr. Aaron Rodgers. Keep it locked in to Darren Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City.
That's right. Big pimping, spinning cheese.
Welcome back to Darren Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City. It's called 913-491-8255. Sterling, coming out of that game last week, you know, Aaron Rodgers, I don't know how you feel about him, but, man, I swear, it's just something about that guy that just rubs me the wrong way. Like, he had a good season, but I tell people, and I don't know why people just don't listen to what I say, because I say what, you know, because I'm speaking the truth, but it seemed to be that he was more concerned about winning the league MVP than actually trying to get to the Super Bowl and try to win it. I mean, obviously, he talked about wanting to host it and possibly using that as a springboard, but, you know, but he had made comments throughout the year that he felt that he should have won more league MVPs than what he had, and it seemed like, you know, everything he was doing was more for self. Even though, you know, I mean, they won, his team won, and they had the number one seed, but I just felt like the season was all about him. And one of the conversations that I've had with someone close to Patrick is that Patrick does not care about the league MVP. All he cares about is winning the Super Bowl, and perhaps, you know, if it comes, Super Bowl MVP, but he knows his career is going to be judged by wins and losses when it comes to, you know, championships, considering that he never won, you know, at the college level or even the high school level. So the fact that he's putting up these numbers and stuff like that is cool, but he's more, you know, again, he's more concerned about winning Super Bowl and Super Bowl MVPs versus regular season MVPs. And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I agree with you for most of it, but I do think that Rodgers did this because he goes, all right, you think I'm falling off the wagon. You think I have nothing left in the bag. You think I should be traded or I'm about done. Well, I'm going to prove to you that I can still play at an MVP level. So I think he worried more about winning the MVP than he did about going far. That said, I don't really blame that loss in the playoffs against Tampa Bay on him. Poor coaching offensively and defensively, with a floor, play calling wise, going for the field goal and all this stuff. But to me, the one that really stuck out was it King in the that led up the touchdown right before half. That right there is the game. I mean, that right there.
Are you talking about the touchdown that Brady?
Yeah, right before half. I mean, that right there. I mean, that was. You take that away, it's probably, you know, an maybe game. I mean, so I think there's a lot more that goes into it. He had a very good game. What was it, 340 yards passing, three touchdowns. He did have one interception. I mean, he played better than Tom Brady did at quarterback. The Buccaneers was a better team, better coached. Buccaneers were a better coached team in that game, and that's what I think the big difference was. But I am with you. I think this season Rodgers cared more about winning MVP than he cared more about winning Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, I just think that if somebody if Rodgers' little tantrum would change the voting for MVP, I doubt it. I think those votes are probably already in. You know, and here's the thing. You know, they talked about it today. You know, Aaron Rodgers might win the MVP, but everybody will still feel like Patrick Mahomes is still the best player in football.
I got to respond to Lamar really quickly on Facebook. He goes, who gets the blame if Brady gets picked off three times? The coaching of the Packers was abysmal. You kick a field goal for no. You take the ball out of Rodgers' hand to kick a field goal. You let up a touchdown when it would have been a 53 yard field goal before halftime. I mean, that right there is the game. You can't win when the coaching is going to be like that. It's just it was abysmal, and that's the biggest reason for me. I don't think I'm not blaming it all on him. Again, could he have done more? Sure. He did throw one interception, but he still outplayed and outdueled Brady. That I don't think is any debate.
I mean, I think he outplayed him. I think again, I think Brady unfortunately just hurt himself. I mean, because again, as I said, he was throwing passes and throwing interceptions. He didn't have to throw because they were already leading by two scores. It's like, dude, just put the game away. You try to throw out and throw bombs over Baghdad, and you get intercepted, and they come back and run it back and score. Now you're in a situation where, excuse me, you know, I mean, this, I mean, if they were to have lost, Brady would have been to blame of that. So I will say that. And also, I'm reading here per Pro Football Talk that it looks like Aaron Rodgers wants a new contract as well. This year, I believe he made about $50 million, and next year he's due to make $33 million.
He has 2 years left in his deal, doesn't he?
No, he has three. It's saying that he's making 22 in 2021, 25 and a half in 2022, and 25 and a half in 2023. Now, granted, obviously we see where the contracts are going. I think Rodgers is like 37, right?
He's 37
years old. So I mean, I don't know. I mean, you start to wonder how much is enough. But here's the thing. If you try, unless you're restructuring your contract to where, yeah, you're getting more money, but you're not leaving enough room, you know, like Patrick does, to where you can bring other players in, then, again, it lets me know that you're thinking more about self because, one, you've already made an S-load of money, you know, already. And so that, I mean, I don't know. Again, you know, you're 37 years old now. You know, Brady, he's 43. He's got, you know, $50 million for this year, next year, on a 2-year deal with them. I don't know. I mean, if you're Packers, do you pay him? I mean, do you give him a new contract or what?
I mean, that 22 or 25, whatever it is, that's nothing in today's NFL. That's a steal if you're going to keep him. But I think we'll find out because I think a lot of teams realize the key to winning and being successful is having quarterbacks on rookie deals. We've seen it with Jared Goff. We've seen it with Carson Wentz, Patrick Mahomes. You see a lot of teams these days go, I mean, Russell Wilson, they were most successful when he was on his rookie deal. Once you have to pay the quarterback, it's tough to fill the team around them. So if they go with Jordan Love, you know, that may be the question is, do they know what they even have in Jordan Love? That's probably the biggest question they have going into this offseason.
Yeah, I'm with you. My only concern is that, look, you know, again, if you're paying a quarterback that much money, you obviously don't have enough money to pay for everybody else. Again, the thing that makes Patrick's contract so special is the fact that, you know, obviously his stuff is guaranteed the year before, but he gives you enough maneuver space that he can always go back and renegotiate and restructure stuff like that, you know, saying to take less money and get more money on the back end. So it works out for the Chiefs in their favor. Sterling, I need you to get better. I need you back in the studio as quickly as possible because I'll probably be out the rest of this week as I start packing for Tampa. But I want to thank you so much for doing the show again as usual. Hope you get better. Want to thank Rudy back at the station, keeping us on the air. And want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to us on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM. We will be back. Those of you all on social media, we'll be back tomorrow. You all have a blessed evening. Stay safe. Wear a mask. We're out of here.